Hey, sports fans, it's world champion Andy Gepper, Mike North. Punch this number in your phone right now. If you're driving, pull over. 1-800-808-3419. 1-800-808-3419 for a free pick and info for the premier handicapping site in the country, Vegas Scores and Odds.com. It's the only site you'll ever need with expert handicappers like John Anthony, Denny Macklin, Tony Sacco, Ray Monahan, yours truly, and many more. Check out the homepage of Vegas Scores and Odds.com for a tote board with your buddy. Follow Vegas Scores and Odds on Twitter and dial up 1-800-808-3419. It's 1-800-808-3419, 1-800-808-3419, or go to VegasScoresandOdds.com.
The following program is suitable for all ages.
The phone. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffone, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass. And get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. And play it right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffone 55. The John Buffone Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffone 55. I'm your host, John Buffone. I'm coming to you live on Tuesday night, November 12th, over our Bears Barroom Radio Network Mixler.com channel. Every week, this show takes a fast-paced approach to analyzing the Chicago Bears, and we add an in-depth look at their upcoming opponent. Here to help us better understand the Giants this week is Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Chris and Joe Show for the Big Blue View Radio Network. He's going to join us in just a bit, but first, I want to bring aboard my producer and moderator, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, we got to stop meeting like this. Our last six shows, we've had only one where we're discussing the win. What's going on?
Just like anytime we try to be positive, I mean, like just when you think things cannot get more frustrating, because that was a game that they should have won. It perfectly encompassed all of the issues plaguing the team this year, all the missed opportunities, the self-inflicted mistakes. And it was the final dagger in any far-fetched playoff hopes there were. And to make matters worse, I feel like because I came down with something. I think I had the flu, and I'm blaming the Bears.
I am so done being – I was done being positive last week. I picked the Bears to lose, and you know what? They proved me right. And so I'm done being positive. I'm just going to call things out for what they are. And, you know, this team is bad right now. So let's just keep calling things out for what they are, because it's going to be a bumpy final 6 weeks.
Let's do this. So, John, before we bring in Joe, I want to let our new listeners know how our show works. So we begin and end the show with five questions that you have 55 seconds to respond to. That's John's way of dedicating Buffone 55 to Doug Buffone, his uncle, who played 15 seasons for the Chicago Bears and wore number 55. So, John, let's get the first five in the books, and then we'll bring in your guest.
All right, let's do it.
So the Bears' deflating 17-7 loss to the Rams effectively ended any their already slim playoff hopes. What are you looking to learn from the Bears in these final six games? Your 55 seconds start now.
Well, what is there to learn? They really don't have any young guys in big positions to try out. And, you know, this is what really sucks about this season. This team is in win-now mode. Back in 2017, when we knew the team was going to suck, there was at least a point in the season when they injected Trubisky into the lineup, and we had a reason to watch. We got to see the potential future franchise quarterback of the Bears. Is anyone excited to see what Chase Daniel can do with a capsizing ship? I'm really digging deep here, but maybe you start Javon Wims to see what you got there. It's not like anyone besides Allen Robinson can catch a damn ball anyways. So what do you look for? You aren't making the playoffs. You don't have a lot of young guys to watch. So the rest of the season is just a placeholder. Do we really want to watch just to see how bad it can get? Do we want to see if it bottoms out so the front office has no choice but to clean house? It's not like you can start looking over mock drafts either because, well, the Bears don't have a first-round pick. So what am I going to learn in the final six games of the 2019 season? The same thing I learned throughout the first 10 games. They're not that good.
I'd like to see what some of their young guys have to, you know, have in store, like Riley Ridley, who has not played, who's not even been active for a game.
She hasn't put a jersey on yet.
So, like, this is the time where you need to start getting these guys involved. Like you said, Allen Robinson is the only one catching balls, but even he had, you know, like a drop or two against the Rams. But also, I mean, I feel like Mitch, if he's healthy, he needs to start these final six games, because you have to see, you know, like what you have in him. Is he going to be a backup? Are you going to cut ties with him? But I mean, obviously, he's still going to be on the roster next year. But yeah. I feel like it's pointless. I mean, you need to see what you have in him.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, Trubisky's going to be on the squad next year, so it's all about whether or not they think he can be a starter or if he is just straight up the backup from here on out.
And so, speaking of Mitch, we've got to talk about the controversy surrounding Matt Nagy's decision to bench Trubisky on that final drive of the game. Trubisky suffered a hip pointer at the end of the first half, but he continued to play through it. What are your thoughts on how the coaching staff handled that situation? You've got 55 ticks.
You know, when I saw Chase Daniel in the game, I was floored. Out of all the times this season where it would have been justifiable to take Trubisky out, I thought this was just bizarre, not really knowing about the hip injury at first. So if the hip injury is legit, Trubisky must have been playing on it for at least a couple drives. So my question is, when there's only 3 minutes left, that's when the staff decides that it's too much for him to go back in? The whole thing just seemed weird. Trubisky certainly wasn't having his worst game of the year. He looked downright capable at times. Obviously, his receivers weren't helping, but we'll get into that later. But what, with all the awful play that came out of Mitch this year, why at this moment was it decided that he needed to come out? Is there a chance that the hip injury really was keeping him from going in? Maybe. Do I buy it 100%? Absolutely not, because it sounds like Trubisky wanted to play through it and he was told to take a seat. What other franchise quarterback has sat down when he wants to keep playing? So I look at this as just another utterly confusing move by an utterly confusing team. This is a wagon with no wheels, no horse, and the cowboy that's driving it, he's drunk as hell.
And like you said, I don't buy it 100%, because like that sideline shot of Nagy talking to him, like, that did not look like someone being benched because of an injury. It looked more like he's being benched because of some type of performance issue. Like, you could watch it 100 times and still kind of come away with a feeling like that.
And you look at Trubisky's face, that doesn't look like a guy that's, you know, running out there like, I'm not healthy enough, I'm going to try to help however I can. That looks like a guy that was told, take a seat.
Oh, he looked pissed on the sideline.
He did.
So the Rams game made it abundantly clear that Trubisky is not the only issue on offense. The receivers have dropped the ball, literally and figuratively, this season, including against the Rams, and they're not helping their quarterback out. What say you about the receivers' struggles? 55 seconds.
Well, it took everyone rowing in the same direction to suck this badly, didn't it? So when your quarterback does make a nice throw, guys are dropping it as if they're surprised it got to them. Taylor Gabriel made some bad drops on Sunday. Even Allen Robinson dropped a few. Throughout the year, we've seen Tariq Cohen make some bad drops. Montgomery makes some bad drops on screenplays that were developing nicely. And the tight ends, well, it would be nice if Chicago got one day. But this is why I said this is a chance to maybe see what you have in Javon Wims. Let him get more playing time. Hey, remember Riley Ridley, that guy you drafted in the fourth round? Going into Sunday, the Bears rookie class played the least amount of snaps out of any team in the league. And most of them are David Montgomery with some Duke Shelley sprinkled in there. So what the hell are you waiting for? What's the end game here? What can it hurt at this point? The season's over, you're playing for nothing, and your receivers are dropping balls. Let someone else try. There's just so much stubbornness surrounding this team, and I don't get it. 2018's over, man. You're going to have one good season and one disastrous season under this new regime. You don't get to play the legacy card. This is not New England. This is not Pittsburgh. This is embarrassing.
I feel like the most frustrating part has been that, like, the offense, Trubisky and his receivers have not been on the same page this year. You know, whether, you know, if it's Mitch overthrowing the receivers who are in the right spot, or if it's Mitch putting the ball exactly where it needs to be and they're dropping it. It's just like there's a complete disconnect. Like, nothing's clicking.
It is a cornucopia of dysfunction.
That sums up the season perfectly. So, stop me, John, if you've heard this before, but the Bears have a kicker problem. So, after starting the season 9 of 10, Pinheiro has missed 4 of his last 7 field goals, including 2 in the first quarter against the Rams, where points were at a premium. Is Pinheiro's time in Chicago done? The clock starts when you do.
Well, speaking of stubbornness, geez, oh man, Pinheiro has been in a rough patch. Missed 2 big kicks against the Rams that would have gone a long way in helping the Bears maybe win that game. But apparently they don't intend on bringing in any competition this week. Nagy showed that he didn't trust him by electing to go for it on 4th down, but, and the guy is missing badly, but nah, let's stick with this guy. Once again, they could bring in a number of guys right now, sign one, and see if he could be the answer for next year. Are we convinced Eddie Pinheiro is the 2020 kicker for the Chicago Bears? I'm not. Then go ahead and get a jump on next year by bringing in some guys that could be the answer. What exactly are we holding on to here? The season is shot. It's over. It's cooked. Why keep things the way that they are right now? Everything about this team is starting to get on my nerves. Maybe I'm being too sensitive or emotional, but why does it seem like this team insists on putting unleaded gas in a diesel engine? I'm not a coach. I'm not a GM. I'm not a player. But you know what? I have eyes. And some of these things just aren't making sense to me. What the hell do I know? I'm not a football genius.
Yeah, I definitely don't see Pinheiro being here next year, but I mean, I could be wrong, depending on what they decide, but I mean, they would be doing a disservice not to try to bring somebody else in, just because the season's shot, you're not playing for anything. I mean, technically, they're not out of the playoffs yet, but let's be real, they are. What could it hurt to bring someone else in?
What are you playing for right now? Try to get yourself ready for the next year, then.
Absolutely. So the defense forced two turnovers in the first quarter, which the Bears failed to convert into points. They held the Rams to 17 points, but it wasn't enough for their offense to overcome. Who stood out on defense for you, and who needed to step up that failed to? You've got 55 seconds.
I'm probably going to go off on a tangent here, but I swear, if I see another person putting a lot of the blame on the defense this year, my head is going to explode. They created two turnovers. The offense got no points. The defense holds Goff to 173 yards passing and zero touchdowns. They hold Gurley to under 100 yards rushing. No Rams receiver had more than three catches. The Rams scored just 17 points. What else could you possibly want? Do they really have to score the touchdowns too? The Bears offense is only gaining 262 yards per game. 30th in the league. They're only scoring 16.9 points per game. 28th in the league. Only the Jets, Bengals, Dolphins, and Redskins are worse. Teams that are nowhere near the playoff picture. That's the company that the Bears are with right now. Meanwhile, the defense is only allowing 17.4 points per game. 4th best in the league. Yeah, Khalil Mack hasn't been a game changer the last 5 games or so. Yeah, they gave up some drives to Philadelphia. But we are putting this defense under such a microscope while the offense is held together with bubblegum and paperclips. You're worrying about the chair arrangement on the Titanic right now. The defense is good. It's not their fault. They have a Keystone Cops offense. With that being said, I'd like to welcome in Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Chris and Joe Show on the Big Blue View Radio Network. He's going to help us break down the Giants a little bit. Joe, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on to talk about the New York Giants.
Yeah, you know what? We're hoping that you can shed some light on a team that maybe the Bears can beat. Maybe you share our sentiments with a little bit of this. But I want to jump right into it, Joe. I want to run through the team starting with the quarterback, Daniel Jones. Obviously, he was the surprise 6th overall pick in the draft. Most people are talking now about the turnovers. 21 of them leads the league. 8 interceptions, 13 are fumbles. Can you play doctor for us and kind of diagnose what's causing all the turnovers for the young rookie quarterback in New York?
Well, with any young quarterback, they're going to make mistakes. They're not going to be 100% clean in their decision-making. But one thing that you have to look at with these turnovers and the issues that he's having with them is the lack of protection he's getting from the offensive line. He doesn't have a lot of time to evaluate things. There's a lot of issues with pass protection and fly protection and picking up blitzes. Any instance in which a free runner is coming at your quarterback, he's not going to be able to operate quickly. And we've seen that time and time again, why the ball keeps getting knocked out of his hands, why he's getting driven to the ground pretty hard, so the ball ends up coming out. So as much as he's making those mistakes and those things need to be coached up and fixed, I'm going to put a little bit of the blame on the offensive line in not really helping him. It's not good to see a rookie quarterback struggling because the guys around him aren't helping him.
Sure, and a guy that's going to be instrumental in the development of Daniel Jones would be head coach Pat Shurmur. He's in his second year with the team. Has his offensive scheme helped or hindered Daniel Jones' development? Have you seen this being a system he can thrive in, or is that also something that might be being part of the turnovers there?
I think that he can definitely thrive in the scheme, but a lot of his passing concepts that he runs in his offense take a little bit more time to develop. I think that right now that they need to lean more towards getting some quick passes out, getting the ball out as quickly as possible. That'll make things a lot easier for a rookie quarterback. So I think down the road he might be able to succeed a lot better and not turn the ball over as much. But he's going to need a little bit more help and some more additions along that offensive line as well as the receiver position.
We're talking to Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Chris and Joe Show for the Big Blue View Radio Network. Joe, over the weekend, the New York Post announced Saquon Barkley as the Giants' most disappointing player so far this season. They're citing that Barkley had 120 and 107 yards in the first two games of the season, but has not topped 72 since. Do you agree with the sentiment that Barkley is disappointing, or is it just kind of a sophomore slumpish, victim of circumstance kind of thing? Because, first of all, he's got a rookie quarterback, and he came back from an injury a lot sooner than a lot of people thought.
Well, it's certainly disappointing considering what we saw from him in his first year. A lot of Giants fans and a lot of people that are a part of the media covering the Giants were so excited from what they saw, and I certainly was too. But you can't put too much emphasis on his lack of performance. You alluded to his injury. Having an issue with an ankle at the running back position is just so hard to play well at, especially because he's so competitive and he wanted to come back and play as soon as he could. He might not have been fully healed, and it seemed pretty clear on tape that he wasn't completely healed. There were a lot of times where he couldn't really make proper cuts. He couldn't really push off properly. So I'm hoping that this bye week really gave him that time to fully recover and stay off his feet a little bit more than he was so far this year.
Saquon try to get back on track against the Bears this week, but I want to switch to the wide receiver position. We're pretty familiar with Golden Tate here in Chicago. Darius Slayton has also caught 5 touchdown passes. Can you tell us about Slayton's progression and the rest of the wide receiving core, including the health status of Sterling Shepard, who's missed 5 games due to a concussion? Can you give us an overall assessment of the wide receiving core in New York?
Well, Sterling Shepard has been up in the air for I can't even remember when this injury first hit, because it's been so long that he's been out and in the concussion protocol. And for anyone that plays football or played football at some point that suffered a concussion or knew someone that suffered a concussion, things like that take a very long time to come back from. So if he's not fully ready, they're not going to rush him back because of the liability. Now, you brought up Darius Slayton, and his progression has been very nice to watch. He missed the first few games of the season because of dealing with a nagging injury, and he's finally at 100%. They're starting to give him some more touches. He had the most targets against the Jets, and that was his real breakout performance, which he had over 100 yards, 10 receptions, and 2 touchdowns. So I think that now that the season seems to be a little bit lost, they're going to try and find ways to scheme him the football and get him some more opportunities. He's a big, long, fast, speedy receiver, so he really fits the mold that Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur are looking for in a receiver. Other than that, Golden Tate is really the only major threat, and he has not really had an explosive year. He missed the first 4 games because of the suspension due to the supplements he was taking, which came out during the preseason. But other than Golden Tate, there's nobody really that I'll admit that really scares me. Cody Latimer is a decent depth player, as well as Benny Fowler. But the real playmakers are Slayton when he's on the field and Sterling Shepard if he's healthy.
Some other pass catchers on the team, tight end position, Evan Engram, he leads the team in receptions, but he's banged up too. Do any idea about his status and who else plays at the tight end position that could have an impact on Sunday?
Well, it's still up in the air if he'll be able to play. He's been dealing with a lower leg injury from what I understand. So there's not a lot of information regarding if he will play. It has been said it's going to be a possibility, but Rhett Ellison, their backup tight end, is still very, very good. He's not as explosive as a pass catcher. He's considered to be their, quote, blocking tight end, but they like to use him in the passing game. They like to sneak him out, on play action or any other opportunities that they get him the ball, because not a lot of teams are really preparing for him to gash them. He's very underrated as an athlete, and that's why from time to time in these games he might not have 100-yard or a 10-reception receiving game, but he'll still pick up those huge chunk plays, those 20-plus-yard chunks, which are very key for this offense.
We're talking to Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Chris and Joe Show for the Big Blue View Radio Network here on Buffon 55. Joe, let's switch sides of the ball over to the defense. The G-men are allowing a lot of yards per game, 361 to be exact. That's the 6th worst in the league. Is this a result of the sputtering offense putting too much stress on the defense, or just a lack of playmakers on the defense?
It's been a little bit of both. There have been some games, particularly against the New England Patriots, where the Giants offense was just not able to continue and finish their drives. That really might be the case this weekend because of how good the Chicago Bears defense is. But I really attribute all of their issues to being how young the secondary is. DeAndre Baker has not played up to par, but he still is a rookie. He's dealing with a lot of issues in reading coverages, knowing what play is called, knowing where he has to be at the right time. Things that should happen early in the season from a rookie and hopefully be fixed by this point in the year, but still have not really had any major strides. They've been working at a lot of other young guys in the secondary. They've been working in Corey Ballantyne, who was a late-round pick. There's an expectation that they'll hopefully get Julian Love some more touches, some more time at the safety position, who was a rookie out of Notre Dame. And then Sam Thiel, who missed all of last year with a shoulder injury, they have also been trying to get him in more as well. So all of these young guys is really just a recipe for disaster because there's so many young players out there. There's so many guys that have little experience and are trying to adapt to the speed of the NFL game. So big emphasis is the lack of playmaking at the secondary.
Let's move up a little bit. Marcus Golden leads the team in sacks with 6.5. This is his first year with the team, and he appears to be a pretty good acquisition. Can you tell us about Golden's play this year, and who else is providing a pass rush for the Giants?
Yeah, Marcus Golden was previously with James Betcher when he was the defensive coordinator in Arizona. And so Betcher made a smart decision in bringing him in because he knows that Marcus Golden isn't the most athletic, explosive, or dynamic pass rusher in the NFL. But he knows that he's a hardworking guy, and he'll pick up a sack or two in a game here or there because he's relentless. James Betcher gets very creative in his blitz calls and trying to scheme that way. So that's really how Marcus Golden gets free, when he's in a one-on-one situation and he's able to beat an offensive tackle. Some of the other guys, that have been generating this pass rush, Lorenzo Carter, who's in his second year from Georgia, has been a nice surprise in his development, but not a huge threat as a pass rusher. Overall, this defensive line, though, has a lot of big, meaty guys, but you can still generate some pressure from them, from Leonard Williams, who they acquired from the Jets, and also from their rookie defensive end, Dexter Lawrence.
Now, depending who's under center for the Bears on Sunday, they could be putting an emphasis on the run. So can you talk to us a little bit about the Giants' run defense? I know they are allowing an average of 122 yards per game. Who are the run stoppers and who aren't the run stoppers on the G-men's defense?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that aren't doing much stopping, and I think Alec Ogletree has not really performed as many of us would have hoped after they traded for him last season. I do put a little bit of the blame on him and a little bit of onus on him because he is very athletic, but he just does not react as quickly as he used to, never really in the right position. And so these giant gashing holes are being opened up to opposing offenses. But the guys that I alluded to, they have, in the previous question, they have all these big dominant forces that play on the defensive line. Leonard Williams, Dexter Lawrence, Dalvin Tomlinson is one of the most underrated nose tackles in the league. He takes up a ton of attention from guards and centers that have to double team him, and you would hope that would free up linebackers, but has not really been the case for the Giants. Last guy, though, that they have is more of a rotational piece since they added Leonard Williams is B.J. Hill, and he might not be getting a ton of snaps right now, but he's still a very, very good player on this D-line.
Talking to Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Chris and Joe Show on the Big Blue View Radio Network. Hey, Joe, we get a kick out of talking about the opposition special teams here. Can you give us a quick profile on somebody on the Giants special teams unit, whether it's a returner, a gunner, a kicker, a punter? Who's standing out for the Giants this year?
I'm always going to draw attention to Aldrick Rosas because he was an all-pro player last season. He made the Pro Bowl. He's just so consistent. He has not been as consistent as he was last year. I put a little bit of blame on Zach Diassi, the long snapper. I'm actually currently a long snapper as well, so I'm one of the few people that can acknowledge and notice those miscues that some other people might not. But he's kind of hung him out to dry with some bad ball placement on some of his field goals and PATs. But Aldrick Rosas, he's got the leg to hit it past 50, 55 yards if you need him to, and he's very consistent in that 30 to 40-yard range.
Going to be a job opening there for you, Joe. What do you think?
I don't know about that.
Another question I always love to ask our guests are, can you kind of gauge the temperature for us of the Giants fan base? We obviously have a good pulse on the Bears fan base and how they feel. What is the sentiment around Giants fans? Are they feeling good about what could be in the future? Are they thinking, oh, here we go again? What is kind of the attitude with Giants fans right now?
Well, it seems a bit split at times, but because of the fact that we're in a New York market, it seems like in any sport, fans expect them to win and to perform really, really well. So there's a bunch of people that are noticeably upset with the fact that they're not performing and that they're not winning. But I think that the people that are being realistic and that have a good expectation of this team and knowing that this team is developing and growing, those people are a little bit more optimistic. I currently sit on that side. I currently sit on the side that I think that even though this team isn't doing well, it's not the end of the world. There's a lot of young players on this team. They just need some more time to develop.
All right, Alyssa, how are the Barflies behaving in the chat room? Do they have any questions for Joe?
Yes, I've got two questions. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So does Eli Manning have anything left? Because, you know, we're kind of looking for quarterbacks here in Chicago.
I have seen some, not murmurs, but I've seen some speculation of people questioning if it would be smart for the Bears to bring in Eli Manning. I don't think that he has a ton left. I think if you wanted to bring him in for a year, maybe as a backup to help develop Mitchell Trubisky, that would be the peak of it. But I think Eli Manning's at the real low end of his career. He's hit that ceiling a while ago, and he's gradually declined in his performance.
And so kind of going back to the rookie, how good do you think Daniel Jones can be? He seems to have all the intangibles.
Yeah, I'm probably one of the few people that really is optimistic for Daniel Jones. I think some people are really emphasizing these turnovers, but I think that happens a lot with rookie quarterbacks. They make mistakes like that. I see him make these really tight throws in these really tight windows, have incredible ball placement. He makes really good decisions. He has great athleticism and a great ability to escape the pocket if he needs to. So I really have high hopes for him to develop into potentially a top 15 quarterback in the league. If things go all as planned and Dave Gettleman can fill out the rest of this roster around him, he can very easily be a very good quarterback.
And so I have one more question for you. What's your pick for the game?
I'm probably going to be picking the Bears in this game just because every single week. Yeah, I know it sounds like I'm being negative, but every single week that the Giants play a team that is struggling, for example, the Lions or the Minnesota Vikings earlier in the season, whenever they face these teams that have struggling offenses, the Giants have a tendency to allow them to get healthy and get back under their feet and get back into a rhythm. Because I think teams know they don't have to overcomplicate things to beat such a young and under experienced secondary.
Oh, God, another kiss of death. Thanks for that, Joe. Well, you probably did. But before we kick you out of here, can you please tell our audience where they can find your work and listen to you and connect with you on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at Joe DeLeon. That's spelled DeLeone. And then you can find any of my other work in the podcasts at bigblueview.com.
All right, Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Chris and Joe Show for the Big Blue View Radio Network. Joe, thanks so much for being on. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, John, that music signifies one thing. It's time for the second half of our B55 questions. So again, the kiss of death, that's not making me feel good because I'm going to be at this game on Sunday.
Well, I didn't feel good going into it, and now I feel a lot worse. So let's just see if we can muddle through this.
I mean, I feel losing to the Rams is one thing, but losing to the 2-8 Giants, like, that would just kind of be just catastrophic.
Well, that would bottom it out, and like I said before in the first segment, that could be the embarrassing loss that they need to say, okay, sweeping changes need to happen.
How do you mean it could get more embarrassing than this?
Oh, I it's the Bears, I feel sure.
That's true. Okay, John, so let's get to our next set of questions.
Let's do it.
So after hearing Joe's analysis, I think that on paper anyway, the Bears hold a sizable edge in talent. So am I wrong or right? Vegas seems to agree too. As I wrote at BearsWire.com that they list the Bears at 6.5 favorites. How do you think the Bears measure up to the Giants? And are you going to lay any money on them? 55 seconds. Anytime.
I'm not going to assume the Bears can beat anybody. It took all they had to beat a Jeff Driskel-led Lions team, and the Rams did everything except score points for the Bears on Sunday. That's how many breaks the Bears got last week. The Bears' defense created turnovers. The Rams committed penalties on fourth down. Big plays for Los Angeles were brought back because of penalties. So why would I think the Bears have a sizable advantage on anyone? They can't score points. The offense is on par with teams that are literally tanking for the number one overall pick. So get out of here with that mentality. That superior feeling that Bears fans had went away 2 months ago. So am I going to put money on the Bears? I would rather invest in Enron right now than put money on the Chicago Bears. I will say this. If the Bears lose to the Giants, this could really push management in a position where if they're embarrassed enough, that changes won't just be a possibility. It could be an inevitability. I'm not necessarily talking about coaches, although that could happen, but sweeping changes across the roster could happen, and maybe that needs to happen. Maybe this isn't a patchwork job as much as it could be a demolition project come February.
Do you want to hear a hilarious stat? The Bears have been favored in every single game except against the Eagles and the Rams.
That is a tragic comedy.
Especially just, I mean, early in the year, you get it. But even now, of recently, it's ridiculous. Like, what have they done to garner that kind of confidence?
I need them to stop doing that, because if they're underdogs, they might start winning the game.
And we need some of our guests to start picking their team to win, too.
I know.
So one of the things about this Giants defense is that they only allow, on average, about 3 catches a game to tight ends. And their 39 yards per game average is the third best in the NFL. So I bring this up because of all the problems the Bears have with their offense, the tight end position might be the worst. Against the Rams, the Bears entered the game with their active tight ends having caught 6 passes all season. My question, John, is what, if anything, can the Bears do to possibly crank out some production from the tight end group? 55 seconds, sir. Go.
Tight ends? What tight ends? The Bears have tight ends on the roster? The Bears don't throw to tight ends because no one on the team can play the tight end position. Burton's gone and has been a colossal disappointment. Shaheen, that project is over. Broniker is a fun prospect, and he's doing all he can with the opportunity, but I don't know if anyone thinks that he is the long-term answer. Once again, I ask, why would I have any confidence that something different is going to happen this week? Why against a defense that actually plays well against tight ends, why would I assume that something's going to just happen where someone sprinkles pixie dust on the team and all of a sudden the tight end position starts producing? This is a dud of a position for the Bears. It has hurt them all year. They tried hiding the position all season, and guess what? You can't hide deficiencies forever. So if 3 catches is the over-under for the tight ends this week, I'm taking the under. I'm seeing a single catch for 4 yards, and that probably came on a 3rd-and-12 situation. So no, there's nothing the Bears can do to get more production out of the tight end position.
And you could argue that Ben Broniker, who's had like 2 significant games of action, has been the best tight end on the Bears this season, which is just embarrassing.
The bar is set pretty low.
Absolutely. So on Sunday after the game here at Bears Barroom, we had a record number of barflies tuning in to the network's postgame show. So the overwhelming sentiment was that Matt Nagy has become annoying and there is a distrust of his abilities and words. So I've been collecting some Matt Nagy comments from the barflies in tonight's chat room, and I'm going to read you some of their comments when I asked, what do you think of Matt Nagy? So he cannot coach or call plays. And he is arrogant, has a huge ego, and he is in over his head. So, John, what do you think of Matt Nagy? Take it away.
I think Matt Nagy has a system that works, but only if everything is in place. Different coaches have different mentalities. Some have a system, and that system is the system. Regardless of the personnel or circumstances, this is what he's going to run because he believes the system works. Other coaches adapt their strategy according to the players they have. We saw that happen in Baltimore when they threw everything out the window to focus on making things work around Lamar Jackson. And I think we can all admit that that worked out just fine. There are negatives and positives of both mentalities. The unwavering system provides stability and consistency, whereas if Lamar Jackson gets hurt, you're hoping that your backup can stabilize things. And maybe we see something like we saw with Chip Kelly in Philadelphia, where he got got rid of all of his talent because he thought he could bring in guys that better fit his system. But I think what we are seeing with Nagy is a lot of trying to fit square pegs in round holes. The system is the system, and, well, he doesn't have the right guys to run it, starting at the quarterback position, working its way to the O-line and over to the tight end position. It just seems like when things are going good, they're great. When something goes off kilter, the train gets derailed and blows up into a million pieces.
I couldn't agree more. It's like he's trying to force his offense to be the Kansas City Chiefs offense, and they're not that. They don't have the pieces. Yes, it's the same scheme, but and he's also coming off very stubborn because he's unwilling to adapt, like you were saying. You see Baltimore, what they're doing with Lamar Jackson, how they're adapting to his strengths, and you saw a little bit of that last year with Matt Nagy did with Trubisky, and this year he's just so kind of like set, this is the scheme, this is what it's going to work if I just keep kind of going at it. But yeah, stubborn is like the first word that comes to mind when I think of him.
I think that he thought that, okay, it's year two for my system with Trubisky. He's going to run exactly what I want. He should be able to do this, and it's going to work. And it has been anything but that.
Absolutely. So, John, I got the same question, only now we're going to talk about Ryan Pace. So here's what some of the Barflies think about Pace. So every quarterback he has acquired or stuck with has failed. His penchant for moving up to get players that he likes has done more harm than good. He's still learning on the job. He doesn't listen or collaborate with veteran scouts. He's stubborn and arrogant. We have some Barflies that are torn on Pace because he's brought in some solid free agents, but he's missed terribly on some recent draft picks. And he is a journeyman with no eye for talent. And he thinks that Pace thinks that he is outsmarting the league by picking these small school kids that come to the NFL and can't acclimate to the top level talent, Adam Shaheen. So what do you think of Ryan Pace, John? 55 seconds.
I think Ryan Pace might have been on a bit of a victory lap this year, and it went terribly wrong. Think about the work that he put in last year. He gets Nagy, who becomes the coach of the year. He brings in Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, and Trey Burton, signed Kyle Fuller to an extension, acquired Khalil Mack. The quarterback you put so much investment in goes to the Pro Bowl. The team goes 12-4. You win executive of the year. Maybe he thought he could just let the machine run itself this year, because at what position did the Bears get better in the offseason? You sign HaHa Clinton Dix to replace Adrian Amos, and after that, you re-sign Aaron Lynch for depth at pass rush. You sign Cordell Patterson, Buster Screen, Mike Davis, who's not even on the team anymore. So the defense doesn't stay as healthy. Your quarterback implodes. Your coach is making questionable play calls. And now you're nowhere near the playoff picture. It was like he was just trying to maintain. And that just doesn't happen in the NFL. You get better or you get worse. And this team got exponentially worse. And now the last six games are pointless.
And the biggest issue, he's missed on the quarterback, like, multiple times, obviously, with Mike Glennon, but obviously most importantly with Mitchell Trubisky. And going, like, the draft in general, you know, he's done really well with some of those late-round picks, but these, you know, first and second-round picks, you know, he hasn't been as good with lately.
And, you know, and now that they don't exactly have a whole ton of draft capital, so it makes you think of how they're going to rebuild some of that stuff.
Absolutely. So it's Buffon Boost time. So this time I'm going to ask you to address your words of wisdom and iterations of inspiration to both Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. So the clock is off, John. Go for it.
Well, I'm kind of done with boosts. A boost isn't going to do a damn thing now. The season's shot, so let's just start calling stuff out for what it is. You guys blew it this year. And for a lot of Bears fans, you have snake-bitten them big time. I said after the game, I can't imagine a scenario where I let myself get excited about a Bears team before the season ever again. They really can't put together back-to-back successful seasons. In the last 30 years, they have had back-to-back playoff seasons just twice. So once every 6 to 8 years, we get blessed with a playoff team. Then the Bears go back into their cave to hibernate. You're cultivating the next generation of jaded Bears fans. People allowed themselves to get excited about this team, and it doesn't even look remotely close to the 2018 version. Let's face it, this sequel sucked. The 2019 Bears are the equivalent of Caddyshack 2, and we all have to stomach watching it for another 6 weeks. Okay. After every week, I give you my prediction to the game, and since I started picking against the Bears, I'm doing a lot better, but I think my opportunities to pick the Bears are fading away, so I think the Bears dig deep, they find themselves, they fight to the very end, and they defeat the mighty New York Giants 13-10. I want to thank Joe DeLeon, co-host of the Christian Joe Show on the Big Blue View Radio Network, for being our guest tonight. Remember, follow me on Twitter at JD Buffon. Make sure you are following the Barroom on Twitter at Bears Barroom, or visit the Facebook page. Alyssa, tell our listeners where they can find your work and contact you on social media.
You can find my work over at bearswired.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Alyssa Barbieri. And I want to let everyone know that coming up next here live on Mixler.com, there is no Fantasy Football Goon Show, but Shy Fans in the Stands will be coming up next. Shows, like all of our live shows, are available on podcast format, so make sure you subscribe to the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
That's right, and sign up on our Mixler.com channel for email updates on all of our live shows. We'd love to have you in our chat room. It's all absolutely free to sign up for. We want to thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed the game. We hope you can stomach the game. We hope that the Bears win, but at this point, nothing's going to surprise us. Remember, if you listen to the podcast version of this show, leave us a review. That helps us out immensely. But until next time, I'm John Buffone. We'll see you next week.
Hey, guys. Everyone in the chat room wants us to stay live for another 15, 20 minutes because there is no Fantasy Football Goon Show tonight, and they want to commiserate a little bit more. So you guys up for it?
I'm hanging out. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, where do we start? I mean, geez, you guys kind of covered all the angst. Is there any good news at all, Alyssa? John, do you think there's anything good that we can hang
on? The Giants?
Good news.
They're playing the Giants, but it's not a guarantee.
Good news is the draft's in 3 months or something like that.
Hey, 2 second-round draft picks. I'm excited about that. I'm going down to the Senior Bowl, and that's where you find your second-rounders and third-rounders down there, although we don't have a third-rounder, but maybe we'll trade up and get one.
Aldo, I know you love Jalen Hurts, but with this Tua injury, does he slide up a little bit now?
Yes, I definitely do. This Tua injury is going to be fascinating to watch what it does to the quarterbacks in this draft. I think there's a great possibility that Jalen goes into the first round now, which is unfortunate for the Bears because I was kind of keeping an eye on him to see if he falls to the second round. But the interesting thing is that if Tua decides to declare, he might fall to the second round. Would you guys, I'll ask both of you guys, would you guys invest the draft pick in Tua knowing that he may not be ready to play next year?
Well, I don't know, because is he able to play at all his rookie season? Not to mention he has a track record of being banged up, not just with his hip injury, but ankle injury, knee. I mean, do you take a flyer on a guy that may not even be able to play for 2 years and has an injury risk? I mean, the only comparable thing I can think of is when Willis McGahee tore up his knee. He had to sit out his entire first year with Buffalo, came back and had a really good career. So I don't know. That's tough. I honestly don't see Tua making it to the second round because somebody will get desperate or somebody will trade back into the first round who already kind of has a placeholder quarterback and would like a developmental guy. So, somebody who has an aging quarterback, and I'm not saying the Steelers would, but I'm saying, maybe the Patriots do it, but I'm not saying the Steelers would, but maybe somebody who has a situation like the Steelers where you got a Big Ben who's up there or the Chargers who are looking for an heir apparent to Phillip Rivers kind of thing. So I don't think he even makes it to the second round because somebody will trade back in for him.
What do you think, Alyssa?
Yeah, agreed. But if he's there, I'd take him. I mean, I know there's an injury risk, but I mean, look at Deshaun Watson when he got hurt in college.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're going to pass on him because of injury, you're not really doing yourself much favors. If talent-wise, he's there, absolutely. You got to use one of your second-round draft picks, maybe even trade up a little bit to get him if he's there.
And if he is there.
If. Big if.
Yeah. And let's say if he is there. It depends on what the Bears want to do. Do they really want to go and, draft another rookie and, does that mean Trubisky's your starter for another year then? And are you willing to punt on a season to where – are you willing to waste another season of the defense for what might happen in 2021? We're going to just keep kicking the can down the road until we have a Trestman situation where maybe the offense looks okay, but the defense can't stop a nosebleed. So I feel like you got to strike while the iron's hot, but I don't know. I don't know what they do with the quarterback position. I really have no clue.
Or they could draft, a quarterback and also bring in a free agent to battle with Trubisky and you let him sit there for a year. I mean, we could do it with the kicker competition. You could bring 8 of them in there and just kind of let them wild.
That's right.
They're gonna bring in the Island of Misfit quarterbacks. You're gonna have Andy Dalton in there, Mariota's in there.
Jay Cutler.
How do you top the kicker competition?
Chris Chandler is gonna arise from the grave and start throwing bombs for the Bears again. Jason Campbell, he'll come back.
Oh God.
Who else can we might bring back. Is Craig Krenzel done, you know, designing rockets? Can he play? Can he play for the Bears?
Team Mittens has a good thought. Team Mittens in the chat room, he has a good thought. He says the defense is the key. Why not invest more into the defense to assure that you're going to have a great, great defense in 2020, and then, you know, try to get by with an adequate offense, because that's essentially what you did last year. I'm paraphrasing what Team Mittens said. He said it much more eloquently than me, but that's me.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I think that the defense should consider to be, or should always be, rebolstered, and I don't know if they did a whole lot of that this year. They're going to need somebody opposite. I don't know if they keep a hold of Leonard Floyd after next season. I don't know if they're going to try to give him a money or contract extension. So eventually, they're going to need support at pass rush, potentially another cornerback. We saw the defense playing well this year, and if the offense continues to just implode on itself, it doesn't matter how good your defense is. The offense has to score points. Now, can they score with this personnel? Maybe, but they can't keep doing the same thing they're doing. So do you shake up the play calling? Obviously, Nagy's not going to give up play calling. So I just want stability. I think that's all that we've ever talked about, is wanting stability with the Bears. So I'm not quick to fire this guy. You know, teams that continuously fire their coaches and fire their GMs, and they're constantly in turnover and scheme changes, those teams never win anything. The Browns have had, like, what, 16 head coaches as the Steelers have had 3 in a certain period of time. So, I mean, I would love for it to just stay stable and been able to get something going with this, but I guess maybe that's too tall of an order to ask.
Well, you bring up a good
point. Team Inns made a good point too about the offensive line. You need to start rebuilding that offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
And it starts there.
Oh my goodness. I'm with you. I'm from the old Jim Fink's school of building a team, and he always said you start at the line of scrimmage, you get the best defensive lineman and offensive lineman, because that's where you control the game. So I every time somebody posts a highlight of Quentin Nelson,
I was just gonna say, I saw you drooling over that today.
That was unbelievable. He's playing left guard, and with his peripheral vision, he sees a blitzing linebacker that the right tackle misses, and he goes from the left guard position to the right tackle position and picks up the blitzer. And you're telling me you wouldn't take this guy in the top 5 draft pick?
This is reminding me of 2 years ago when we were all battling about who we really wanted at that pick.
I mean, exactly.
I mean, you were a Nelson guy. A lot of people were Roquan Smith. I was an Edmonds guy, and I'm kind of glad that didn't happen.
Yeah. He's a great talent. I think he's still going to develop into something.
Yeah.
But he's
only 16 years old or something like that.
Exactly. And you mentioned Leonard Floyd. They have picked up the 5th-year option, but I think they've got until March to, like, finalize it. And in my opinion, I think that they let him go, because I think, and maybe Alyssa, you know this because your work at Bears Wire, and perhaps you've covered it, I think that the 5th-year option is like an amalgamation of an average of the top 5 salaries at that position, which is what he would get. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. And is he worth that money?
Exactly.
He shows up against the Packers. Like, if they play the Packers every week, then there you go. You're going to get production from him. But other than that, he seems to be sitting in the background.
Yeah, I don't
know what happened. And I don't know, because this guy, if you're playing opposite of Khalil Mack, that should be a second fiddle's dream. Oh my God, they're tripling this guy. I'm getting one-on-one matchups the entire game. This ain't working. They need to get somebody else on the other side, because then if you can force focus to the other guy who's doing well, maybe if Leonard Floyd's playing like a house on fire, they can't put 3 guys on Mack because they got to account for the other guy. So they need somebody to come off the other edge to perform well. And, you know, Floyd, he's athletic. He gets his sideline speed's pretty good. But as far as getting any kind of pressure, I have not seen it. I have not seen much of it at all.
It always seems to be like a step too late.
Yeah. Now, a lot of talk in the chat room tonight about, you know, should you fire Pace? So let me ask you guys to kind of play the role of George McCaskey. Your mom comes over to you and she says, I've had it. I'm tired. Ryan is a nice kid, but you either get rid of him or you do something to get us some victories and get us back in the playoffs. I'm tired of this losing. And so you're George McCaskey. What do you do? Do you fire the general manager, Ryan Pace, and rebuild? Do you ask him to fire the coach, or do you just entrust those guys to fix the problem? Why don't you guys mull it over? Because I don't know what the heck to do.
I hate turnover, and when it comes to those kind of positions, because you're basically admitting that, you know, you're probably not going to win the next year, maybe not the year after that. And Pace came in when, 2015 or so? And so we got like 4 years, and you have one playoff appearance, you win Executive of the Year. If you turn it over to the new GM, the GM might want to get a new coach, so you have a new coach and a new GM, which always sounds nice until you hire a Mark Trestman. So it always sounds nice when you can hire a new guy, but that new guy better be damn good, or you're also sentencing yourself to another 4 or 5 years of being really bad. Mm. So I try to say, let's try to make it work with the GM, or especially the GM. Let's try to make it work with this GM. If you got to fire a coach in the middle of it, maybe you can rebuild on the fly there. But to just do a sweeping change, all of a sudden, a new GM, new coach. If they're bad, then all of a sudden, it's another GM and another coach. And all of a sudden, 4 or 5 years, you haven't accomplished a damn thing. So if you fire them, you better have a guy in mind, or you better have an idea of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I agree, because, you know, right now this team is not in a rebuild mode. They have a championship caliber defense when everyone's healthy. So this is not the time just, you know, trash everything and start over. They need to focus on, obviously, the offensive side of the ball. But I don't think getting rid of Pace would, you know, they're not rebuilding, so I don't think that they should fire him. Yes.
And I said this a couple weeks ago. I'm not on the big fire Nagy train quite yet, just because I want to see what he would do with a different quarterback. Now, I know Mitch has not been getting much help. I know that the offensive line has been, you know, subpar at best. I know the receivers are dropping balls. But I've also seen Trubisky not look at open receivers. I've seen him taking bad sacks. He hasn't played well. I think we can all be in agreement that he isn't playing super well this year. So I think I would like to see him with a competent quarterback. Now, I know that's asking a lot as a Chicago Bears fan, but a guy that can understand the system, not a Chase Daniel, not that kind, but an actual competent quarterback for this system, and see if that works. And if not, then his system isn't going to work here.
And speaking of the next quarterback, Pace and Nagy really need to be on the same page. We've heard so much about how in sync that they are together, and they need to make the decision on this next quarterback, whether it's in the draft and free agency. They need to be on the same page when they determine who they're going to bring in.
One of the names thrown in the chat room is Alex Smith, who appears to be recovering nicely from that horrific fractured leg. Now, I think he's 36, but
Nagy's guy.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Do you consider him at least?
Oh, I do 100%, because just like we talked about in the beginning of the year, I wasn't on the get rid of Chase Daniel bandwagon after we saw the horrific preseason, because I thought he brought a lot to the quarterback room because he was familiar with the system and that would help development of Trubisky. But if you bring a guy who not only knows the system but has proven that he can be a good starter in the league, do you think if you put peak Alex Smith on the Bears, how much better are they this year? Alex Smith 3 years ago, 2 years ago, how much better are the Bears? How many more games do the Bears win this year if they have that? Now, I'm not saying he's going to just all of a sudden turn it back on. He hasn't, you know, played competitive football in a year, and he's coming off a horrific injury where it seems like he almost, like, lost his leg or something like that. So I'm not saying you're going to plug him in and he's going to be the Alex Smith of 2016 or anything. But think about that. If you have that, he has a cerebral knowledge of that system better than almost anybody right now. So I'd at least think about it.
Definitely. I mean, like, when people are talking about Trubisky and what he could become, you know, a lot of people are saying, okay, if he can just be Alex Smith, right? So obviously, you know, that's not looking like it'll be the case. But if we had Alex Smith on this team with this defense, and obviously some pieces on the offense really need to be reworked, but this team would be just that much better with a proven veteran like him.
Is it possible, and I'll ask this to both of you guys, that if, you know, if they really get their asses handed to them for the rest of the year, let's say they finish 6-10, and that's just an utter, just not even a disappointment, but just an utter failure of a season. Let's say they finish 6-10. does that, is that a kick in the ass to, you know, supposedly egotistical guys who think that their system is better and it's their way or the highway kind of thing? Is that a kick in the ass to say, hey, we better find something out or we're going to be out of here? Or does that ego or does that stubbornness kind of just follow you the whole way through and say, you know what, we're going down with the ship, this system works, we're going to make it work?
You would think even at this point of the season, considering all the expectations and what they accomplished last year, and this is what you have this year after everything you accomplished last year. And now, but like, that's the like one of the issues with Nagy is he's just so stubborn. And like, I feel like his ego is kind of getting in the way. He's so committed to his system and making it work. And it's not Kansas City. But man, I don't know.
I think that I'm still trying to figure out the psyche of Matt Nagy, because he, you know, he'll come on into the press conference and he accepts accountability and he's kind of has this self-effacing manner. You know, I'm still learning on the job and all this, but at the same time, he turns around, he sounds so egotistical about, and his actions speak of being stubborn-headed. I mean, how many times did he run out of the I formation knowing that you're averaging about 9 yards per play out of the I formation, yet I don't know if they even ran the I against the Rams. And so there's this, in the press conference, he says, I didn't come over here to run the I formation. Well, but if it's working, why? What are you doing? What are you doing? So I'm really concerned about this head coach. And as much as I liked him in 2018, and it was probably a 10 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10, this year it's gone down to a 1 or 2. I'm just concerned that his scheme isn't working and he's stubborn-headed about it. He's supposed to be a quarterback whisperer, and either Mitch is really bad or he's not as good as advertised. And then the other thing, I was going to ask you guys, Cliff Wilson posted this in the chat room just as when I was going to ask you guys. The offensive line, I think that schematically, these guys it's like Harry Heaston doesn't coach these guys for Matt Nagy's system. You know what I mean? There seems to be like a round peg, square hole, whatever it's called. Whatever it is, it's just not, it's not conducive for one another. And so maybe Harry Heaston is going to be the scapegoat here, or something has to happen. I think that there is just a discord going on in terms of the vibe of the team that I'm really, really concerned about. And if it doesn't get fixed this offseason, we could be doing more of these Buffon 55 shows for the next few years where we're bitching and moaning and crying in our soup, because I don't know how they're going to fix this. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it seems like they're Heaston's kind of training road graders for a system that doesn't need road graders.
Right,
and, you know, the thing that kind of struck me was, what is the level of communication or when, if Mitch was hurt and he has this hip pointer that's really hindering him, and it looked like it hindered him on this play, what the hell are you doing running an option play on 3rd and 1?
Oh my gosh.
If your quarterback has a bad hip and can't move, are you so stubborn to think, my guy who can't move, can't run, probably can't pitch it, but this is the smartest play call we can make on 3rd and 1. We're going to run an option to the short side of the field and see if we can pick up 3rd and 1. When you have a guy in Montgomery who can pick up yards, who doesn't really go down after initial contact, can fall forward for 1 yard. I don't get why we constantly got to try to be the smartest guy in the room. You constantly got to draw up things. You don't have to be Rain Man. It's 3rd and 1. Just take the ball down their throat. And so I don't understand. So there's two things. Either he didn't know and the communication there sucks, or he did know and just didn't care because he thought his play call was the right thing to do.
The whole thing is super suspicious, because originally in his post-game press conference, he said that he didn't know until like the fourth quarter. And then on his Monday press conference, he said that he knew it at halftime because he knew that Trubisky was getting checked out. So I'm like, then why are you running that?
So what if the guy's getting checked out and he got hurt early in the game? Don't you think the head coach is the first guy they came up and say, hey, Mitch got dinged up. He's got a hip pointer. His hips kind of bothered him. Not just because the head coach should know that, which he should, but second of all, you should adjust your play calling then if your quarterback can't move. So what the hell is this all about?
I don't know. I'm really, really worried, guys. And so I am going to go curl up in a fetal position here in the corner of my little office bar room basement and pray for better days ahead. And you know what? If they fail against the Giants, then you're right. They're going to lose the rest of these games. I mean, because after the Giants, you got at Detroit, which is always tough to win on Thanksgiving Day at Detroit. You got the Cowboys. You got Green Bay at Lambeau. You got the Chiefs. And you know how heartbreaking that's going to be, watching Patrick Mahomes carve up the Bears' defense. And then you got the finale at Minnesota. And the only way you win there is if the Vikings have locked up the division. But that probably won't happen because they're going to be fighting with the Packers probably to the very end. So the schedule is tough. The situation is even tougher with the injuries and the coaching problems and the quarterback.
They could lose every game. They could lose every game.
Exactly. So I am not a happy man right now. But you know what?
This might be the last chance for a victory.
Exactly. The good news is that everybody stuck around in the chat room, and we added even more listeners, so they were digging on this. We got to do this more often.
I'm glad everybody enjoyed overtime. This was kind of me. I kind of forgot that we were on the air for a little while.
Yeah, really?
Awesome.
All right.
What do we do anyways?
We're right at the one-hour mark. Why don't we pull the plug, and then we'll make room for Shy fans in the stands. They're going to come in, and their guests are the 100 Proof guys. I'm coming on with Phil and Shane, so that's going to be an F-bomb fest.
Awesome. Hey, guys, thanks for sticking around in the chat room. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.